Okay, so it takes effort to be a human being, right? To get out of bed, to do the things. I mean, there's laundry, like all the things. It takes effort to be a human being, let alone turn our hearts and minds towards awakening. So joyful efforts, the process of practicing Buddha Dharma, the process of practicing awakening is in some ways the cycle or the spiral of remembering what's important, remembering wisdom and compassion and connection, and then forgetting it. And then remembering it, like, oh yeah. And then forgetting. It's the same as our meditation practice, right? Like we sit down to meditate and we're remembering to be present, and then we get distracted. And then for some reason, some beautiful miracle of a moment, mindfulness arises again, and we notice and we remember what we're doing. And then we forget, and then we remember. So this process of forgetting and remembering is the process of practice. It is the process of awakening. And so then the question for me becomes, how do we continually make a joyful effort? How do we make an effort in a way that supports us in this remembering and forgetting process? How can we make a joyful effort so that our practice is allowing us to creatively respond to whatever's happening? So our practice allows us to creatively respond to whatever's happening. So much can happen in the meditation, so much can happen in life. And our practice is a practice of coming into the present moment, seeing clearly, and then choosing wisely. And how can we do this in a way over our lifetime so that our efforts accumulate and support us when things are difficult? The Dalai Lama, he said something like, don't evaluate your practice in shorter time periods than every decade. And I think that's really interesting, right? Like we're to evaluate our practice in decade-long increments. And at the same time, can we make this joyful effort? Can we remember what's important to us? Wisdom, compassion, loving kindness. Can we remember that and keep coming back to that in a joyful way? So how do we keep showing up in the face of what is happening? Now, I've been teaching, I teach some other things. There's lots of things I teach, but I teach some other Dharma groups. And one of the things we've been talking about recently is a pausing practice. It's a daily life practice where we're just throughout the day remembering to pause and notice what's happening. So this pausing practice, it's actually very simple to do. A pausing practice, we could do it right now. It's just a pausing. And then we keep going. It's a simple practice. The hard part is remembering to do it, right? So with time, we can start to remember more and more times. The more we remember to do it, the more we do it. So this pausing practice. And then in particular, I've been teaching from a book by Pema Chodron, and she's from the Tibetan Buddhist lineage, and she talks about this process of getting hooked, that we get stuck or we get hooked all the time. It's the word that she uses, a Tibetan Buddhist word, is shenpa, which is triggered or hooked, or in this lineage, I might use the word clinging. When we get lost in clinging, that sort of that feeling, a kind of lockdown, shutdown versus an open mind, a responsive mind, a mind that can creatively respond to what's happening in the moment versus the mind that can get tight and small, right? Like the Shempa process. And this is happening when we start to do a pausing practice. We might notice, oh wow, there's like I've got a little hooked. I got a little hooked right now. Or sometimes, wow, I got really hooked. Like a big thing that can happen. And her instructions are when we are noticing this, is to just name it. To name, oh, Shempa is like this. Now, to be honest, for me and maybe for you, we need to fine-tune the language for ourselves so that the language is supporting us opening rather than closing down more. So, what I mean is, for me, if I start to notice, oh, Shempa, then I somehow, like, there's a little bit inside of me that's like, oh, I'm not supposed to have Shempa. And then I get Shempa, I get hooked on getting hooked. Did you ever have that happen? It's called the second arrow, and then the third arrow, and the fourth arrow, right? Like, oh, right. So for me, a word that works better is, oh, resistance. Resistance to the moment is like this. Or, Kristin Neff, who's a social scientist and done a lot of research on self-compassion, she recommends using the language, this hurts, or even something as simple as ouch. So we
Right.
have our pause practice, right? Our pausing practice, and we might notice when we had a pause that we're a little hooked on something. And then what do we do is we just can name it, like, oh, resistance is like this, or ouch, or oh, Shempa is here. And it's not to make it go away, but it's to be aware that it's here. And we can feel it, and we can keep going. Keep going, keep going. We can keep remembering and forgetting. How can we make joyful effort? Okay, so just like to, in particular, say, even though I'm a little bit into the talk already, but in particular, say a warm welcome to all of you. So you're welcome here. If your heart is a mess, you're welcome. If you're feeling peaceful, you're welcome. If you're in outrage over what's going on in the world, you're welcome here and you're probably in good company. If you're unwell or ill, you're welcome here. If you're peaceful and connected, you're welcome here. So we all are welcome here, that we're welcome here to practice together. I have this poem that I really love from Rumi, who's a Persian poet, and he said, "Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshiper, lover of leaving, it doesn't matter. Ours is not a caravan of despair. Come, even if you've broken your vows 1,000 times, come, yet again, come, come." So that to me speaks of the sense of our practice being able to meet us wherever we are, however we are, and that we can keep showing up and that we don't have to be some sort of perfected being, right? That we're welcome here to start here and make effort from where we are. So we can acknowledge the difficulties in our lives. We can acknowledge the limiting factors.
And our intention, you are funny and curious,
Somebody's
not
not muted.
empathetic, and for the way that you elevate the facts, we're dead to you.
Let's see. Okay, I think we're all set. Okay. Okay, so we can acknowledge the difficulties, our limiting factors, but we're not diminished or limited by them. So when we're doing our pausing practice, and then we notice that there's some suffering going on, or there's something that's bothering us, or we're hooked onto something, we can acknowledge them, but we can remember also that we're not defined by those difficulties. That we're not limited by them or diminished, I guess. So we are practicing, all of us together, we are practicing awakening in uncertain times. So we take refuge and we turn towards the wisdom and compassion, even as we are facing the difficulties that are in this world. And we can keep making effort because this is, I don't know, I just think it's so important. I mean, I feel like what else could we do with our lives aside from what else would be more important, really, than practicing awakening, practicing compassion, practicing really letting go, practicing a pausing practice so that we can, wake up together. So the human heart has freedom in itself. The human heart has freedom in itself to choose love and dignity and respect, no matter what is happening for you. If there's greed, if there's hatred, if there's ignorance, they cause suffering. We can practice letting them go. Love, generosity, and wisdom bring about the end of suffering. So let's foster them. Let's make a joyful effort to that end. We can let ourselves become a kind of beacon of Dharma. This is the world that's your world and my world. It's our world. Let's plant seeds of beautiful heart qualities, and we'll water them, and we'll do this together. So it's not like you have to do this on your own. We do this together. So your effort, my effort, however humble it is, it matters. It matters, and that we can support each other in this. So, I mean, I'm quite positive that you've been thinking about the world that we live in, the politics, the economy, the climate, the state of the earth, the racism, the misogyny. There's a lot. There's a lot going on, and it's very easy to get quite overwhelmed. I don't know, maybe it isn't for you, but I think it's very easy to get quite overwhelmed. Times are uncertain. Times are difficult. Times are fearful, and they're full of change. But I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about that, because we don't need to repeat that. We hear that enough on the news, probably, right? And so how the question then becomes, how do we awaken in that context? So it's pretty much universally agreed upon that things are not going well. Have you noticed this? It's pretty universal, right? Like, okay, yeah, I've been talking, like, this is what I hear about. Things are not going well. It's not because we're all depressed. It's just what we seem to all think is happening, that the world is in bad shape on a lot of different levels. But we are, in general, caring people. I haven't actually met anybody who doesn't care, right? This is why it's so hard for us, because we care. So we care about the world. And then sometimes if we don't, we think if we should feel a sense of grief or dread or upset. And if we don't, it means that we either that we don't care and we're callous, or we're kidding ourselves or getting distracted. Which is, of course, what we do feel sometimes too. So it seems to make sense that we should feel that things are not going well. And then we have our own personal problems too, like the own health issues or stuff that's going on in your family or money challenges. And then we conflate our own problems with our own life and the state of the world, and it gets even messier and maybe feels even more overwhelming and depressing. And by the end of the day spent with this attitude, we get tired, we get worn out, and we go to bed thinking that there's no remedy, that there's nothing to be done. But that's actually not true. There are people for thousands of years that have been practicing awakening. Probably all around you, you see people that reach out. Maybe you yourself help your neighbor. Sometimes for me, it seems like the world feels so overwhelming, but what I can do is help my neighbors, bring groceries to my neighbor who doesn't get out, or do come to a community, right? And practice meditation together. There's so many things that we can do. So our Dharma practice itself is a kind of medicine. I use that metaphor. Our Dharma practice itself is a kind of medicine for this view that everything's horrible and will continue to be horrible and will only continue to get worse. And we can call that medicine of the Dharma, we can call that our joyful effort. That is a cultivation. So we have to remember that the first noble truth is that there is that which is hard to bear. All conditioned existence is suffering. That's one translation. This first noble truth, there is that which is hard to bear. The first noble truth is not that bad politics is suffering, that environmental problems are suffering, our bad economics is suffering. No, the first noble truth is that all conditioned experience, right? So all of those things, without exception, exhibit the quality of dukkha, or suffering. In other words, yes, things are dark, but that's why we practice. That's why we come together and practice. That's why we continue to endeavor to address the forces in our own hearts of greed and hatred and confusion and ignorance. And we come and we sit in some ways, like you already know this, you're here. It's Sunday night. You're not watching the Oscars. You're here with us together. And we're practicing together, making that joyful other effort together. So even if we elect the most perfect politician, if that even exists, if we could somehow elect that, it doesn't mean that there's not going to be more problems. This is the nature of conditioned existence. So we are all going to get sick and die. This is the first noble truth. Even under the best of environmental policies, the day comes when things will shift and change. So Dharma practice, our practice takes on this darkness. That's the darkness that we see in the world around us, the darkness in our own hearts. It begins there. It begins there. So in the face of those troubles, of that difficulty and those challenges, in the midst of that, that's when we practice. It's not for next year when things are better. It's for right now, right in the middle of it. Darkness doesn't discourage our practice. Challenge and hardship doesn't discourage our practice. It's the motivation for our practice. So we practice, then we practice not just for ourselves, we practice for the world. We practice out of care for each other. It's so important. Sometimes I think that's one of the beautiful things about meditating with people. I'm less likely to just get up and do something else if I'm meditating with other people, right? It's peer pressure, but I'm meditating for, and you can meditate for me and I can meditate for you. Like, we do this together. So our joyful effort means energy, enthusiasm, vitality, joyful effort, the rising effort, the rising chi, the rising energy that we meet our practice with, that we meet the challenges with. In some ways, it is the practice of hopefulness. I'm not talking about being hopeful. It's the practice of hopefulness. The hopefulness doesn't mean that we pretend that there's going to be a good outcome and that everything is going to work out fine in the end. It doesn't mean that we pretend that. In fact, this practice, this waking up for each other, we know that everything will turn out just fine in the end because the nature of time is healing. If there's one moment, there's going to be another, and something is bound to happen. This is essentially a good thing. Something will happen. Maybe we don't like what happens, but something will happen. Maybe it will be painful, but the earth does continue. Our lives do continue. We can continue to practice waking up together. We know through our practice that every moment is a moment full of potential. So sometimes we think like, oh, this impermanence thing, we might think, oh, it just means horrible things could happen. And it's true, but it also means that amazing things could happen at any moment. It's the don't know. The mind often wants to lock it down. Like, I know something horrible is going to happen, or I know something good is going to happen, because the mind wants to have some certainty. But actually, we don't know what's going to happen. anything could happen. I heard James Baraz give a talk once, and he was talking about how this uncertainty shows up when in sports, like you don't know who's going to win. And that's especially exciting when I don't really watch sports that much, but I thought it was really beautiful. This sense of like the underdog could win the game. Like you just don't know, right? Like this potential of uncertainty, this ground of uncertainty that we're all living in means that we don't know. And as soon as your mind tells you, I know what's going to happen. This is going to happen and that's going to happen. Then we know we've actually stepped out of being able to respond creatively to the moment. We stepped out of that fluid openness and we've closed down a little bit. When the mind tells us that there's some certainty, when the mind tells us someone else is like this, they've always been like this, or the situation is like this and it's always been like this. When we get kind of closed down, we've forgotten our pausing practice. We've forgotten to open. We've forgotten that anything can happen. People who practice awakening for the benefit of all, with their understanding of radical interconnectedness, with our tremendous faith in the breath, with our tremendous faith in practice, we can find this very hopeful, this idea that anything could happen at any moment. So we can imagine that a good outcome could happen even when things look dark. It could go that way, it could not. Sometimes things look really, really dark, and then to everyone's surprise, there's a good outcome that no one could have anticipated. People who practice for each other can imagine such a thing because nobody knows what's going to happen. Anything by definition is possible in the moment that has not yet arrived. But we can equally imagine horrible outcomes. We've already seen so many horrible things happening in the world. So we're aware of this too. But our practice has nothing to do with outcomes. I feel like this is a radical statement. Our practice has nothing to do with outcomes. If we're practicing to give the outcome that we want, that's very short-sighted, and it's not actually how this world works. So when we're practicing, we're not hoping for something in particular. We can have a hopeful attitude. We can have this hopeful attitude based on the profound understanding that a moment in time, the present moment, always is always here with us. But that the outcomes, in some ways, we could say like the outcome is not our business. It reminds me of the people like Martin Luther King Jr. that practice for that practiced in their time for racial justice. Right? Like that sense of just showing up for what's important. What's important? The cultivation of wisdom and compassion. And we keep going. We keep going, accepting the challenge of an unknown future with our joyful effort. So this joyful effort is a path that we can walk on. It's a practice that we can do. We can do it with our pausing practice. So the pausing practice throughout your day, like, oh, what's here? What's here? And when something's difficult, when there's a moment of dukkha, we can name it. Oh, dukkha is like this, or ouch, or shempa, or resistance, whatever it might be, we name it. And then we can feel it. I don't mean analyze it. I mean, feel it. How does it feel in the body? How is it showing up? And then we just keep going. We keep going. So I had two things more I wanted to share with you. I found these five vows from Joanna Macy. And I thought they were really interesting in the context of this joyful effort. The five vows, she says, one is to commit myself daily to the healing of our world and the welfare of all beings. So this first vow from Joanna Macy is to commit myself daily to the healing of our world and the welfare of all beings. So that sounds a little like, oh, the welfare of all beings. That sounds, I don't know, that sounds like a really difficult thing to do. But what about taking care of your neighbors? What about taking care of the people around you? What about taking care of or being kind to someone, I don't know, in traffic or at the grocery store? So taking care of the welfare of all beings in your domain of experience, and then healing the world through the cultivation of our own hearts, the cultivation of the loving kindness, the compassion, the mudita, the equanimity. So committing ourselves daily to the healing of our world and the welfare of all beings. And then she goes on, her second vow is to live on earth more lightly and less violently in the food, products, and energy I consume. This is right in line with the Buddhist precepts, isn't it not? I vow to not take what is not given. I vow not to steal. So we live, right, to live more lightly and less violently in the food, products, and energy I consume. So the next vow, to draw strength and guidance from the living earth, the ancestors, the future beings, and my brothers and sisters of all species. Now, here's what I have to say about this. To draw strength and guidance from the living earth, the ancestors, the future beings, and my brothers and sisters of all species. Now, to me, this isn't very rational. I was, you know, raised in the United States, a very kind of rational thing. Like, how can I draw strength from the future beings and the ancestors? But I have to say, when I allow myself to open to the possibility that I could draw strength from the ancestors, from the future beings, and from my brothers and sisters of all species, when I allow myself to consider that could be a possibility, there's a sense of more mystery and awe, which is this entire world as it arises, a more sense of connection. But maybe for you, this vow wouldn't work for you, and that's fine. Everybody, it's important that we fine-tune our understanding of the Dharma so that we're not just doing the meditation or doing the practices or following the teachings by rote, but we're actually engaging with them. Remember what I said at the beginning, that we're practicing in order to creatively respond to what's happening. So this sentence, for me, actually helps me be more present, because it helps me, allows me to feel more connected with the mystery, right? The possibility that the ancestors that came before, and maybe it's not for you like a sense of a, I don't know, like a line of ghosts behind you, but maybe just the Buddha who lived 2,600 years ago, who gave us these teachings passed down, teacher to student. These are our ancestors, or the love, right, through your lineage that led to you being here, right, the familial love. So to draw on the strength and guidance from the living earth, she says in this vow, this beautiful living earth. There's a quote from Dogen, who's a Zen teacher from, I think, the 1300s. There's something about the sense that the trees and the sky and the clouds are cheering us on. I love to think of this, right? Like the trees are cheering us on in our process of awakening, because we're not separate from the trees. The more awake we are, the more awake the whole world is, right? Like it's this deep connectedness. So this sense that the trees are cheering us on, that the living earth is cheering us on. You know, on the night of the Buddha's awakening, in the darkest part of the night when he was overcome with Mara, with the waves of craving and irritation and doubt, the Buddha put his hand on the earth and said that with the earth as my witness. If the Buddha needed the earth, of course I need the earth too. And so do you. We're not separate from the earth. So we can draw strength and guidance from the living earth. Okay, so then her next vow, that was the third one, the fourth one, to support others in their work for the world and to ask for help when I feel the need. Ugh, this is beautiful, right? This is our joyful effort to support others in their work for the world and to ask for help when I feel the need. And then the fifth one, she says, this fifth vow, this fifth joyful vow, to pursue a daily spiritual practice that clarifies my mind, strengthens my heart, and supports me in observing these vows. What a beautiful aspiration. I would wonder what is important to you. Like, what is so important to you in your life, in your practice, that you're willing to give up the attachment to the outcome and let the integrity of the effort be what supports you. So when times are uncertain, like now, when times are difficult, fearful, full of change, they become, these times become the perfect place to deepen our practice of awakening. It's imperative that we take time to quiet the mind and tend to our hearts. We can remember to look at the sky, and we can remember the vastness of the universe. There are seasons for everything. Gain and loss, expansion and contraction is woven through our lives, woven through the bigger world. We can learn from each other. We can learn from the trees, and we can practice our joyful effort of awakening for the benefit of each other and for this world.